made $1 million and then became addicted to drugs and lost all. Like, this all happened within like 6 months.
What we do here is go back, 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 back.
All right, welcome back to Awkward Surprising, podcast Awkward Bad Surprising Good. I'm your host, Colby Grant. And we have a special guest today. I actually wrote down, when I have like, you know, big guests, semi-big guests, or whatever you want to call it, I try to write down my intro because like in my head, it's like, it sounds amazing, but if I don't write it down, it sounds stupid. So let me introduce this, even though you guys already see who it is on the episode, but let me do an introduction. This is the other host of the number one stock podcast in the world, Pennies Going in Raw, which has been featured in the New York Times and recently just had their first ever live Reno event. The man that became a millionaire at the age of 21 and will yell at you for hours if you do not have or know what a Roth IRA is. We have Hoodie Henny on the podcast. I specifically asked for Hoodie Henny because every time I see him on his podcast and he's in a hoodie, he gets very passionate. So hopefully I can get the eye twitch and the passionate speech.
Hey, listen, Colby, thank you so much for having me, man. This has been a long time coming, hasn't it?
Yes. It's been a long time. We've been flirting on Instagram for like a good month. And I know a lot of people that know me probably have no idea who you are. They're like, who's this guy that Colby's flirting with? It doesn't matter. They'll find out today.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you know, I don't have a girlfriend, so it's pretty much like you and I have been flirting, you know?
I mean, you got to get what you got to get sometimes.
Yeah. No, but seriously, man, thanks so much for having me on. I really enjoyed Dan's episode. I really enjoyed, you know, your content and thank you so much, man. I'm super honored.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And speaking of Dan, like that episode, like usually I'm not nervous because I usually have like a day or so to get prepared. That day he messaged me like that night. He was like, hey, I can do it tonight. And I'm like, I'm not going to say no. Like he might never be able to do it. So that episode, I was prepared, but I wasn't, but I was like extremely nervous. But I'm glad it came out really well, and I'm glad people enjoyed it. But this time, I don't want to say I'm prepared, because I hate when people are like, oh, I'm prepared. It's like, just talk. I just have, like, notes. I'll walk around, I'll be at work, and I'm like, jot this down. Yeah. So, for instance, you are on Pennies Going in Raw, and, you know, I talked to Dan about it, and like the idea of starting a podcast. And I know with him, he's the one that pretty much started the idea of, hey, you know, who wants to do a podcast with me? So like, why did you jump and say, hey, like, let me do it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good question. So Dan used to message me a pretty fair amount about this stock that we were both swinging, and that was GHSI. And we were, I mean, this thing wasn't doing anything. It wasn't going up. It wasn't going down. It had news and it wasn't doing anything. And he'd be like, yo, what's your price target? What's your price target? What's your price target? I honestly would answer here and there. But even back then, I would get so many DMs that it was impossible to answer. But he said something one day that really caught my attention about faking his graduation from Auburn. And his biggest achievement being airballing at a Auburn basketball game. And that really caught my attention. And he had asked like what I'm doing that Saturday or something. And at the time I wasn't doing anything. And so I was like, yeah, like screw it, I'll do it. And then, and he was like, so now you're the host. And that's like, he introduced me as like my co-host Hugh Henny. And I was like, oh, this is like a thing now. And that's pretty much how Pennies Going in Raw came to be. And, you know, we've had so many bumps along the way and so many, you know, it's crazy that, that tomorrow the 29th is going to be our 100th episode. It's insane.
Yeah, no, that's good from like a person that's seen you guys start from the beginning, because obviously like Dan was when, I guess, FinTwit was taken off. He was the only person that you could see and like, oh, that's actually a real person.
Yeah.
And then like with you, you had, you know, your Hugh Hefner. And speaking of that, where did that come from? Like, where did you come up with the idea of Hugh Henny or Hugh Hefner?
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was like 16 or 17, I had MH Stocks as my Twitter handle. And I was like, oh yeah, like I'm a 17-year-old, you know, trying to make it inside the stock market. And I would get clowned. Now would be a different kind of level of clowning, but even then it was so bad. And so what would happen is that I would release a research report and they'd be like, you can't spell shit, like you don't know grammar, like why would I ever look at your research, you know, stuff like that. And so I was like, fuck, like, you know, this isn't working. So I came back on Twitter as Hugh Henny, because my last name being Hennessy. And people used to say my grandfather used to look like Hugh Hefner. And one day, like, and I'm not a creative person at all, but one day I was sitting there, I was like, with my grandpa, and I was like, Hugh Henny. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, that's like the most creative thing I've ever done. And so I came back on Twitter as Hugh Henny and as you Hugh Hefner to be taken a little more seriously, which, like, in hindsight, like, Hugh Hefner probably shouldn't have been my first choice, but it was like Hugh Henny came to mind. Yeah. I was like, oh, no brainer. So
you got to also think, you weren't thinking like long term as like, oh, I'm gonna start a podcast, I'm gonna do all this stuff.
I hated social media outside of FinTwit, and I didn't even love FinTwit. It was just because trading would be so damn lonely. So, yeah. You know what I mean? So I came on FinTwit, even though it was a little toxic, I was still like, yeah, like this is better than being lonely. Yeah, and yeah, you know what I mean? So that's really how it started. But no, I wasn't thinking long term at all. And like I said, I hated social media. I would only go on, I would have a few people's notifications, and that would be the only time that I would go on Twitter, or if I'm posting a research report. Other than that, now I like live on Twitter.
I think everybody does now. To an extent, you could say it's like a bad thing, because I think when I got on Twitter, and I've talked to multiple people, like if at the time, like, I was smart like I am now, I'd be fine. But like at that time when I got on, I really didn't know what I was doing. And I kind of just like, I took chances, which I shouldn't have. But I think with my personality, like, I got to take chances because that's the person that I am. But no, yeah, FinTwit, yeah, it can get you, like, when you're supposed to sit on your hands, Finch will say something that's like, oh, gotta get off my hands, and then you mess up. Last thing about Dan. So after the episode, because during the episode, I asked them, I said, hey, you know, what do you guys see yourself going with Pennies Going Raw? And at that time, you guys didn't announce the iHeartRadio thing yet. So 2 days later, I think after the podcast, and he was like, yeah, you know, we might be doing some TV stuff. And I was like, I think I should cut that out. But then he messaged me. He was like, hey, bro, don't tell anybody about the iHeart deal. And I was like, I didn't even know about the iHeart deal. But I know. I'm a nobody. Plus, I'm not going to say anything.
We had started negotiating the contract for the iHeart deal in February. And from February until May is how long it took us to negotiate it. And I swear to God, Dan had tweeted about it 5 or 6 times after like a few White Claws, and I would text it. Like I had to start I didn't have his alerts turned on. And I turned them on because people would be like, dude, like you signed with iHeart. And I was like, no, like we're in negotiations with them. And so I would text him, be like, dude, delete this shit right now. Like,
that was my next question with you and Dan, because you guys are like, you could say yin and yang. Like you're like the businessman, the young person that, like, this is the perception that I guess people would get, is you're the young person, the businessman, you're behind the scenes. Dan is kind of like, he's out. Dan is out there. Like, he's drinking at his pool. He just moved to another place. Like, he's having a good old time. And then it's like, where's Hugh? Oh, Hugh's studying for something. Hugh's doing business things. No one can find Hugh because, you know, stuff like that. So like, were you ever kind of like nervous? Oh, prime example, like Charlamagne Tha God. I think when he went on Breakfast Club, I think DJ Envy was like, hey, I want a contract just in case he does something to where it doesn't affect me. And I know Dan's not that crazy, but did you ever like think, man, I hope he doesn't just like do something that I'm like, dude.
I mean, all the time. We both. So he always hopes that I don't that I have a little bit of fun and I don't like put the restraints on something that can be, you know, content worthy and stuff like that. And I'm always worried that we're gonna get canceled for something, you know, that I say that just gets misconstrued, or something that he says that just gets misconstrued. Because at the end of the day, like I said, you know, until 4 months ago, neither of us even had a college degree. I mean, we were really our manager, Sean O'Grady, you know, he was my professor at the College of New Jersey, and he coined this statement, and I love it. He said, "We're building this plane while flying it." And I think that is really, that really is embodies PGIR. And so, I mean, we, like I said, we hit a lot of bumps in the road. And the thing that really makes PGIR work is that Dan and I are so different. Like, Dan would never hang out with me in real life, and I would kick Dan's ass in real life. And I mean, every time at the end of the vacations or, you know, boys trips, whatever we go on, we're like, yeah, dude, like, don't talk to me for the next 3 days. Like, I know we got to do the podcast, but we'll think about that in 3 days. But it works out. Like I said, I think a lot of people like that dynamic, you know?
Yeah. I think that if you guys were similar, it'd be kind of like the typical stock market podcast or business podcast.
Yeah. Nobody wants to see me go through charts for 2 hours. Yeah, you know,
someone wants to hear something that Dan might say that was like, oh, he probably shouldn't say it, but this is why I like it. It's, you don't know what you're going to get from Dan, but then you don't know if Henny or Hugh or whatever is going to like yell at you for not doing something that he's very passionate about.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing with you guys. And with college, because you did just graduate college, I want to say last year, correct?
Sorry, say that one more time. Sorry, getting
hot. You graduated college last year, correct?
Yeah, I graduated in May, May 2021.
So my question with that is, and this is going to get to the whole, because I know some people are like, oh, well, how did he become a millionaire at 21? You know, go to Penny's Going Around. I'm pretty sure there's an episode. But we're going to talk about it a little bit. But like, since you've been in the stock market and making like a good amount of money, do you feel like you should have got a degree, or did you feel like I'm almost done, I might as well just finish it?
Yeah. So there's a few things that the degree does. One, a lot of times some of my comments or some of the things that I say or get quoted about can be easily misconstrued for me not liking college or me being against college. And I think college is a beautiful thing. I just think that going $400,000 in debt to then take on a salary of $40,000 is stupid. So a lot of times it can come off like I don't like college. So by me getting my degree, it's like, hey, I went through it. You know, I am educated. Despite the grammar, I am educated. At the end of the day, I loved college. I met so many great people. I learned a lot. The biggest thing, I had so much fun. Like, I loved college. It was so much fun all the time. But like I said, I think that at the end of the day, it was a good thing. I think it helped me mature and helped me grow, which is part of the reason I wasn't a great trader in the beginning. So if I had to do it again, I would definitely go to college. There's some things that I would do a little bit differently. Like, I played it a little bit safe in college. As far as changing the bureaucracy of college, which I think that if I had to do it over again, I would probably push that pin a little bit harder or push that button a little bit harder, even if it got me in trouble. So that's probably the one thing that I would change. But getting the overall degree, no, it legitimizes me. You know, I'm educated, I learned a lot, and I had a great time.
Yeah. No, I went to college, but yeah, obviously I'm a teacher. So like,
yeah,
you know, you have high schoolers and they're like, you know, I don't know what I want to do in life. And like, at this point, like, I do a lot of things. So obviously I'm a teacher, out of high school. I have my own small business. I'm starting another small business with photography. And
that's awesome.
I tell all my other students, it's like, there's other things you can do besides go to college as of right now.
Yeah.
And I was talking to one of my kids and I said, you know, she was like, well, what'd you go to school for? And I was like, you know, a teacher. And, you know, here I am right now. And she's like, you sound like you don't want to do it. And I said, it's not that I don't like teaching, because I love teaching. Like, I love the interaction with students and stuff like that. But I think if I knew what I knew right now, as you said, I'd go back and maybe, you know, do something else, like really dive into the things that I actually liked back then, because I think being an entrepreneur wasn't a thing when I was maybe your age. So, and I always tell them, like, if you're very passionate about something, just dive into it. Like, I mean, yeah, college is a good backup plan, but don't want to go in debt either.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest piece of advice that I usually give young people going into school is that just don't go to school to go to school. You know, always have a plan. And if you need some time, you know, to figure out what that plan is. And again, your plan can shift. I mean, my plan shifts all the time. My plan, I mean, I did the same thing, Colby, for 4.5 years, like the same schedule every day, all day. And now that is disruptive. And it kind of put off my center balance a little bit, because I had done the same thing every day. Like, I, to the minute almost. So that was a little tough for me, but I think the biggest piece of advice that I usually give people, younger people going into or trying to figure out what they want to do, is that just don't go to school to go to school. Have a plan. You know, and if you need some time to do that plan, that's fine, but always make sure that you're bettering yourself and you're working. I had a friend after high school who didn't know what they wanted to do. And so they didn't do anything for like 2 years. And they were still inside the same spot. And I was like, oh, I was like, if I'm telling people that it's okay not to have a plan and to figure it out, it also can't be that. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, have a plan. If it takes you some time, that's fine, but make sure that you're working or you're trying out different things. You know, like, everyone always has different options inside their mind. And there's no problem with going up to somebody who is an expert inside that field and saying, hey, I'll work for $5 an hour, or I'll work for free. I'm just kind of exploring different career paths, you know, something like that. I think that's really the way to do it. You know, I was blessed that from a young age that I really knew where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do.
Yeah. And I mean, you hit that on the nose, especially with like trying out new things and working with maybe someone that is in a field that you want to do, because like, I have a kid, you know, he doesn't know what he wants to do, but he's good at like working in the yard and doing yard work. And I was like, hey, you know, me and my friend, you know, we have a podcast, Jacksonville Entrepreneurs, where, you know, I talk about like the growth of Grant Tutoring, and she talks about her photography business. And we had someone on there that talked about how he started his lawn business. So we listened to the podcast and we like took notes and talked about like things that he could do to, you know, if he wanted to start a business in lawn, or even working for someone that has their own business and saying, hey, let me just do it for free, maybe like $5, just to see if I'm good at it. And if you're good at it, he'll probably ask you to come back and then go from there. But I mean, yeah, with especially kids these days, there's so many things they can do besides college, even if it's trade school. Like, there's kids that can go to trade school that make more money than me.
And I mean, again, I think it comes down to how much money you have, much the old saying, how much you keep and how much you make and how much you keep, you know. A lot of times, I mean, you know, you look at pro athletes, go from making $5 million a year, $10 million a year, the year that they retire, they don't make anything, or maybe they even have a small pension. That's fine. But they're used to spending a mil to 2.5 mil a year. And all of a sudden, you know, in 3-4 years, they're broke. So I think that, I mean, it really comes down to return on investment. I really think that anyone spending, you know, $300,000-$400,000 for a bachelor's degree is crazy. Unless your parents are going to pay for it, then hey,
Or if you have a scholarship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 No, if you got a scholarship, go ahead. Or hey, listen, your parents want to pay for it. You know, good on them. I mean, that's fantastic. But no, I think that that's really the thing or really the other thing is borrowing money to live at college. I had one girl who was messaging me. She had $300,000 in education loans, and over the course of the 4 years, she had racked up an additional $100,000 in debt for living expenses and partying expenses. And I was like, this is like, do you realize how much money that is? You know, so I think, yeah. And I mean, it's easy because when you get the loan, it's like, oh, and this is for recreational use, you know, like stuff like that. And it's like, oh, okay, great. Like I'll just pay it back, you know, with everything else. All of a sudden you get your bill at the end of 4 years and it's, you know, $100,000 higher than what you thought. So I think that's really, you know, I hope for better education inside the future as far as debt, return on investment, and and taking out money to live.
Yeah, that too. Speaking of all this, like, and just as you're talking, it's kind of like, how did you get to like the way you are? Because obviously you're 22 now, you're not 21. I think you're 22, correct?
Yeah, yeah, I'm 22.
Yeah, so he's not a 21-year-old. No.
Yeah.
But like, how did you get like your head on straight? Like you talked about your family and stuff like that, but like what kind of like, I guess, morals did they instill in you to make you so like level-headed, or I guess know exactly what you wanted to do? Because a lot of parents, what I hear in high school, some of them, a lot of the parents that are either, you know, have a good living, or maybe they are from like a different country, they want their child to be like a doctor, lawyer, something that is safe. So like, how did you get your head on straight? And like, did they want you to get a certain degree? Sorry for like the different layers.
No. So I think the first part is that my parents were always super supportive in the fact that they were like, hey, listen, like, you know, if you pay for it, like, yeah, go ahead, like do what you want, kid. You know, like as long as you're not doing drugs in the back of 7-Eleven, like, yeah, go ahead, you know, like do your thing. So they were always super supportive. And I mean, even to this day, they don't really understand what I do. I mean, mom has a smaller account. I started mom with a like $2,000 account. I think it's at like 2050 or something. So they were super supportive. And the biggest thing was that I always knew that I kind of wanted to have money. So that was always like my biggest driver. I would work 2-3 jobs, stuff like that. And I would just, you know, be around older people. I used to do snow shoveling during the winters, and we'd be out there for 12, 15 hours. And then I'd go to high school. And so just being around those older guys, and even, you know, when I worked at a sports bar, stuff like that, you know, I would just pick up different things. And it would be like, I would hear someone say like, oh, I'm taking out, you know, I need to take out $300 loan for this week, and like a personal loan. I'm like, what? And then I had my parents on the other side who are always save, but not invest. They never were really huge in the stock market, you know, besides their 401ks compounding. So it was kind of like, I have this one extreme on one side, and then I have this one extreme on the other side. And that's when I was like, hang on, you're both fucking wrong. Or excuse me, you're both wrong. But like I said, is that combined with the support behind my parents, and, you know, I'm lucky that I was, that being a younger person, on FinTwit or even in life, being a younger person that was trying to do, you know, I would say things that I wasn't even ready for, people were so willing to help me. So I've, like, someone always asked me, you know, who was your biggest mentor? And it's really like, I could name 15 people off the top of my head, because so many people were like, you know, were just so helpful and were just there for me, in any capacity that I needed. And then, you know, it just came down to being my own person. It's a really cool thing. That's why I think I try and do as much as possible. And part of the reason I do the podcast, like the podcast is like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but the podcast isn't like a huge winner for me, inside like the like, you know, win column, as far as money goes. Like the podcast isn't moving the needle. But I think
you weren't expecting that, I guess. It was kind of like one of those things that, you know, hey, me and Dan doing podcasts, and then obviously once you clicked, it's like, oh, this is actually something. It's like, obviously you invested in it, but you weren't like long-term thinking.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm being honest, I don't love doing like Tuesday after market close, like being down like, you know, 250, $300,000. Like, I don't love hopping on the podcast and doing like a weekly podcast. I could not do that. But again, I think it comes back to, I was so supported and I had so many mentors that were always willing to pick up my phone. I was like, okay, I can't do that for, you know, the 30,000 people that DM me, but this is a way that I can, you know, at least kind of be there, you know?
Yeah. And how you talked about, like, you knew someone that just took out loans and you had your family that was just like safe. So like my mom and my dad, well, my mom was always like, save for rainy day. You never know. Like, and I was big on saving because every time like I buy something, my car would mess up. And it's like, oh, good thing I have this rainy day account.
Yeah.
And my dad talked to me about investing, but I think at the time, like, I don't want to say it wasn't cool. So like, one, I had no idea what he was talking about. And two, I was like, if I can't see my money, then I don't want anything to do with it. So he's talked to me about it. I have a friend that really like pushed it on me and I still was just like, no. Obviously when, you know, COVID hit, I did get in, but like, how did you, like, as you said, like no one really talked to you about investing. Like, where did that come from? Was it just like I know I can make money from this, or?
No, I mean, one of the things that I always talk about is the best and worst thing that ever happened to me was my first trade, like tripled within like 20 minutes of me buying it on a good earnings reports after hours. And I proceeded to like basically lose my account after that. But I was like, this is a real thing. Like, I can take $1,000 and turn it $3,000 from this chair in a few minutes. I was like, I need like $10 inside my bank account. That was pretty much like the mindset. I was like, I will just continue to compound this until I have so much money that I literally just don't know how much money I have. That was always like the mindset. So, and again, it comes back to like a maturity level of not having like real responsibilities and not understanding the amount of risk that I was taking on when I just throw my net worth at things. But again, you know what I mean?
Like, it was that mindset. Net worth, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it just comes back to that mindset thing, you know, of it was probably a little bit of a maturity thing or lack of maturity mixed with, you know, not really having like real responsibilities to where I was like, oh my God, like I will send every paycheck into this account and be a billionaire by 19.
Yeah. And is that like the goal? Oh, well, first, like, you might have talked about it, but like, can you give the listeners kind of an idea? You don't have to like go the whole backstory, but just like, one, how did you become a millionaire? Like, the feeling of when you first became, like, you're just like, oh, I'm a millionaire. Like, just like that whole, like, I'm so young, I have $1 million. So now what? Like,
yeah, I think I'm going to ruin it for a lot of people, but making $200 felt the same as making $1 million. I know that, and I hate to say this again, but I really think it comes back to, I was so young and just couldn't conceptualize that, like, how much money it really was, that I was like, oh, okay, sick. So I went and got some sushi and I didn't do anything. And then at $2 million, I got a, you know, Amex Platinum card. And that was like my $2 million thing. And that even took me like 2 hours of sitting there, like, $500 a month, like, that's a lot of money. Like, so it was one of those things where I just couldn't conceptualize it, because even to this day, I don't, like, today I had a six-figure day, but like, if I spend $5,000 on something, I'm sweating, I'm freaking out, you know? So I think that I think that I'm going to ruin it because the feeling, I mean, it was cool. I was like, yeah, like two commas inside my account. Like that's kind of cool. You know, but three commas would be better, Mitch. You know, that was always like my thinking, but yeah, I really think that I had a better feeling when I started to be consistently green and make $200 than when I made $1 million. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
People might be like, oh, he's probably just being modest, whatever. But I think if you follow you on Twitter, you know, like the personality that you have. Like, I sent you a picture of Starbucks and you're like, dude, why are you getting Starbucks? Like, you are you're not a big spender. You see your friends buying cars. Like, Dan bought a car. You're like, dude, I'm just going to keep driving my little whatever you drive.
I don't have a car. Yeah.
Oh, well, never mind.
So yeah,
there's that.
Yeah, I've definitely increased my spending, but part of that comes down to, like, you know, I think that I do need to conceptualize sometimes the money for both reasons, for the reasons of like humbleness and gratitude, but also for the reason that, like, hey, dude, like, you just can't lose like $300,000-$400,000 because you're fucking sleeping. Like that, like, you can't do that. Like, that's so much money. Like, what are you doing? So I think that that's why, like, I bought like a, you know, $50,000 watch, you know, like stuff like that to really conceptualize and be like, okay, like, this is a lot of money. But no, you're right. It still comes back to, like, you know, when the guys tell me that they spend $30 a day at Starbucks, I'm like, dude, what? I'm like, do you know how much that compounds to? And they're like, dude, I made 50 grand today. I'm like, yes. And 50 grand minus the 30, dumbass. You know what I mean? So
no, like, when I think you talked about it maybe a while ago and you're like having a big rant about it. And like, my wife loves Starbucks. And at the time I would be going to Dunkin' because Dunkin' is way cheaper. It's like $3 cheaper. You get a medium. It's $3.67. You go get the same thing at Starbucks, it's $6, you know.
Yeah.
Eight plus, you know, you got your wife, you gotta buy for. That's $12. So she got me on this this one drink. And now it's just like, I gotta go to Starbucks. As much as it costs, I'm just like,
I know. But but you know what though? If that's like your one thing, but what I've always realized, especially about myself, is and let's even take like food, for instance. If I go out 2 days in a row, like let's say Friday night and Saturday night, then like Sunday, I'm like, nah, I can go to brunch. Like, what's one more day? You know, like it's really not upping it that much. But if I hold off on Friday and Saturday, I'm like, oh, I didn't do Friday or Saturday. I don't have to do Sunday. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's just, again, maybe it's just me.
Yeah. It's like a mindset that you have. Like, it's
once you start rolling down one path, it's like, okay, well, like, I could, like, these protein bites at Starbucks are pretty good. And then now it's another $2,000 next year, you know? And then it's like, so, and that's just me. And again, it might be like a maturity thing on my point.
It could be like, because as I said, it's something that it seems like you've always, even if you had $200, you'd be the same way. And
yeah.
So, and I told my kids, I was like, we're talking about something about like making life easier. And I said, does money make your life easy? And I was like, it was like an agree or disagree answer. And obviously they all said agree. And I was like, but if you can't, I said, I disagree, because if you're not good with money, then that $1 million that you have in the bank is going to disappear just like the $200.
Exactly. Yeah, that's so true. Kobe, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it really is like that. And that's why
having a lesson today.
And that's why, like, I live in like a pretty nice apartment in a pretty nice building in like a really nice part of town, like on the water, like, but I don't face the water, you know, like there's still like little things, and like, you know, and at the back end of the day, it's like a tax write-off. So it's like I've increased my living expenses, but when I was making $200,000 a year, I was spending way more than when, you know, comparatively to what I'm making now, you know? So in a way, I will increase my spending, But I always keep that inside the back of my head. Like, dude, like it's funny because last month, Reno, the live event that we did, it cost me a pretty penny. It was something that I had anticipated, but when I saw the real numbers, I was like, oh, okay. So then I cut like my budget out completely back to like what I was doing in college, when I was like super frugal. And so I did that for like 2 or 3 weeks. And I was like, you know what? Like I'm back. I could, yeah. I think it took me, I think instead of taking an Uber, I took mass transit. It took me like an extra 40 minutes. And I was like, yeah, okay. I could do an Uber too, you know?
Yeah. It's like you take a month off. It's like, let me just get back to, get back to normal. And then we'll go back to, you know, not crazy.
Yeah.
But we'll take it up a little notch.
Yeah, exactly.
I also want to talk to you about, I don't want to say I've been reading books because reading is not my thing that I like to do, but I've read 3 books, almost 4, but you ruined one of my books. I was reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. What is it?
Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Yes. Yeah. And I was listening to one of your episodes and you're like, oh, that guy's bankrupt, or like he filed for bankruptcy. And I was like, I'm not reading this book anymore.
So yeah.
I have not picked up that book since I heard you say that.
You know, it's funny because that did ruin it for me as well. I still think the book is really good. Like Rich Dad Poor Dad still has a lot of really good lessons, but it really comes down to, you know, why am I going to take advice from this guy? It's like taking advice from like in a trainer who eats pizza every day. You know what I mean? Like or a nutritionist who eats pizza every day. Like I'm like, what? You know, like, that doesn't really make sense. It just seems like he just didn't follow his book. Like he just got like this like a godly figure.
He's like, he did the opposite of you. Like when you said you got all that money, you're like, hey, it's kind of like $200. But when, you know, some people's mindset change when they hit, you know, 2 commas or whatever, they just have all this money coming in, kind of like athletes. Like athletes have no idea really what to do except what they see. They see jewelry, they see big houses. They don't understand like I should probably save it or invest it type thing.
Oh, don't worry. Me and the pro athletes, we're gonna change that within the next 3 decades. We're gonna change that.
Are you gonna be the next Rock?
Oh, you know that would be right? Yeah. I it's funny because I'm so lucky that I have such a great team that supports me. You know, there's like 4 or 5 of us that work together really closely. And I mean, they make everything happen for me. So every idea that I have has started to come to fruition. So it's great, but it's also dangerous because I'm like, I see something like I'll see like Robert Gold just went broke. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, guys, like we got to start working on this right now, you know? And it's a danger. It's a beautiful and dangerous thing that I'm supported by such a great team, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, it's also, you see a lot of these older people. So it's kind of like, you know what not to do, but you also have your head on straight as well to know like, yeah, at any moment I could just wake up and be greedy and lose it all for some stupid reason.
Oh yeah. I mean, especially like there's my strategy is built around holding through conviction and holding through red. And I mean, that's difficult even for like my friends, like the one swing that I'm in, the one stock that I'm in right now, it's up like 30% in the past week. And my friend, or even like today, it went from down 4% to up 6%. And my friends are like, I don't understand how you look at that and just don't sell any. You know, it's difficult, but I think that's why I'm even more disciplined, because I'm not a day trader. So I'm not constantly locking those profits. I'm constantly not. And at any moment, it truly can be, you know, like a blow upable situation. That's also one of the reasons that during the week I'm pretty particular about my schedule, because, you know, if you miss news on one thing by 30 seconds, or let's even say that you sleep in, you know, cause the market does open at 4 a.m. I'm talking Eastern time. markets opens up at 4 a.m. Eastern time. If news comes out at 7:01 a.m. and you sleep until 8:30, the move could have happened, or you could wake up to down 50% of your portfolio. That happened to me once. And ever since then, I said there was no way that I was ever going to put myself inside a situation like that.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I feel like, you know, obviously you deal with it. Like a lot of people have been there too, but even on FinTwit, you just see a lot of finger pointing. So it's kind of like, oh, you did this to me. Like obviously you deal with it. You know, Van deals with it. All of Atlas deals with it. Zach deals with it probably the most out of everybody. But it's one of those things that like, I can't see myself on Twitter pointing a finger at someone like, oh yeah, made me lose like 10 bucks or something. I it's funny to watch from my perspective, but I don't think I can. Hopefully, like I've never done it. I'm pretty sure I've never done it, but I don't know how you guys can handle that part.
My immature response is, would you like to compare losses? And that's just the way that, when I had gotten 60,000 followers in a pretty short amount of time, that was when like, I would try and look for like everybody's approval. I just had to realize that, hey, you know, I don't insider trade. Like I don't know everything that's going to happen inside the market at all times. And so I'm sorry if you lost money because I was long something, like I lost money as well. So, you know, I'm sorry. And half the time it would be like, you know, I would talk to them inside the DMs and be like, hey, like, you know, show me where you sold or something. And there was a few times where I had bought at the same price that they had sold. And those were the few times where like, hey man, like maybe this strategy isn't for you. Cause I think I bought your shares, you know, and then we would go back and forth and then it ended up being like, some of them would end up being podcast listeners. And so I always think that I try not to burn any bridges, but I also kind of keep everything like a grain of salt. You know what I mean? Yeah. I used to hate on people. I used to, when I was MH stocks, I mean, I remember one time, there was someone that said that, there was a really good earnings report and it was like their revenue was up, but their operating expense was through the roof as well. And so I had only read the part about the good revenue, or like the tweet only had in good revenue. And so I bought and it tanked. And I went at this guy and then I was like, wait, I didn't catch that, you know? So,
yeah.
And then that's what changed it for me.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't understand, but that's what people do when they hide their face. So a couple more questions about not podcasting, the stocks. And then I got some other questions if you have time.
Yeah, man.
So we know that you're big on Roth accounts, Roth IRAs. So just so people know, I know you guys have two episodes. You just had, I think two episodes ago, you just had another like part two of Roths. So just explain to the people who don't really know who you are, like, why are you so into Roth IRAs? Just like a quick little,
yeah,
because they can go, you know, this is a plug for, you know, Penny's Going in Raw, go listen to it, you know, he'll really go in depth.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about normal retirement accounts, you really think about a 401k, and that's because 80% of the world is an employee and not an employer. So when you think about that, 80% of the world, when they walk into their job on the first day, they're given a 401k. Why? Because the employer matches the employee. Okay. And everybody takes the 401k and they contribute to it and they put it inside, you know, whatever their financial advisor tells them, and they go through life. And then when they go to retire, let's say that they have $100,000 in there and their tax rate is 30%. When they go and take that money out, they didn't, most people don't realize that they owe Uncle Sam $30,000, or, you know, that 30% tax rate. My mom actually didn't realize that. And so the reason I like Roth is a few different reasons. One, most people don't know about it because you're not most people aren't handed a 401k at the door. There's a few exceptions, but most of the time everybody just knows about a 401k, you know, 401k, deferred comp, something like that. The other reason is that you contribute to your Roth IRA with taxed money. So that means that you put the money inside this Roth, and, you know, let's say that you have a traditional and a Roth IRA. When you go to take that money out at the end, you know, let's call it at your 65th birthday, when you're going to take that money out, one, you're going to lose $30,000, and the other, you're going to have $100,000. That Roth is going to give you that $100,000. So it's going to grow completely tax-free. Okay. And the other reason I like it is because of the withdrawal exceptions. A lot of people come at me like, Hugh, like, what if I don't even make it till retirement? Okay, well, you know, I'm sorry. Like, that's a shame. But you also get withdrawal exceptions, being your first home, medical expenses, student loans. There's so many exceptions for the big things. Like, no, you can't take it out for Las Vegas, but I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that you can't take it out for Las Vegas. So I think that those are like the really key points to the Roth IRA is that it's just not really known too often. And then, you know, I always think about it in this light, is that if the government puts a cap on the amount you're allowed to put in here, then it's probably a pretty good deal, or it's probably something that someone's losing on, and it's not you if they're putting a cap on it. So that's the way that I try and look at it, really. And the other thing before, because this is the other thing, comes back to I don't hate the traditional 401k. I just think that everybody knows about, or a large majority know about the 401k, and a large majority never have heard of a Roth IRA.
Well, if you don't have a Roth IRA, you should probably get one.
Yeah.
So we're not going to talk about my situation, but all right. So I have one. There's nothing in it. I'm getting there. I'm working on it. So don't yell at me.
Colby, bro.
No, I'm like, I have one. I have the account set up.
Yeah.
But I have not put anything in it.
Okay.
I'm getting there. Like, I'm in a new stage in my life to where I'm like, I need to start over. And I know a lot of people don't like talking about, like, when they mess up with the stock market, everybody talks about like how they're perfect, or, you know, stuff like that. And I think at this time, and I told my wife, I was like, hey, I'm just starting over. Like, and I was like, well, we're not poor. Like, we're not going to go live in a box, but yeah. I need to restart, because I think at this time, like for this year and a half, I've been just hoping and wishing when I could have just did what I did at first. And I think now that I'm mentally like mature now, like I've been through it. I've taken my chances. I've done everything that I'd rather do now than do with a whole bunch of money.
Dude, I'm so thankful that I'm so thankful that I blindly started with, like, you know, a few thousand dollars, because if I did somehow have, like, let's call it $100,000, I would have 100% lost it all. There would be no question about it. Like I said, my first trade, I made 300% in 20 minutes, and I had like literally gotten so lucky. I had basically top tick sold it. Like, it couldn't have been any better. And like I said, is that I basically lost for like the next like 2-3 years. Like, that's really like what it came down to, is that I consistently lost. And not only did I lose what was inside the account, but I would work jobs to fund the account to lose money. So like, if I did somehow have $100,000, let's even say, like, you know, there's some people that I see like with, you know, they're like, hey, like, I just started trading, like, I have $500,000. I'm like, what do you stop? Like, take out $499,000 and leave it out of your brokerage account, because nobody's born a great trader. So that's the beautiful thing and the sucky thing. Like, the beautiful thing is that you can learn how to do this. The terrible thing is that most people just can't walk up to the stock market and make 100% consistently. It's going to be like the casino. You're going to do well and then lose it all.
And that's where the whole FinTwit comes in. It's like, it's the gift and the curse, because it's the gift, because you, as you said, you're not by yourself. You get to see trade, you kind of see how people work and kind of figure out your strategy, but it's also a curse, because you might get greedy, especially if you just have all this money. And then it's like, we're going back to the finger question. So I did my get greedy stuff. And I was like, you know what? Let me step back. Let me just play it safe, which, you know, I'm good with just putting money in and letting it sit. Like, I'm fine with that. But I think I needed to get that itch of, oh, I can do that. Oh, I can do that too. No, I can't do that. I'm going to go to what I know. And then once I feel really comfortable, then I'll, you know, get back into it. And I think some people should probably have that conversation with themselves to say like, hey, maybe I should step back out and then just take a breather and then figure out what is my ultimate goal. Like, is it just to post green stuff on Twitter, or is it to make my life better? And that's what, you know, I had to come to Jesus moment with myself, that I had to do that. So I wanted to talk to you about relationships, because, you know, you're young, you're rich, and we talked about how we used to flirt through Instagram messages or Instagram, whatever. So I think at first, and I'm going to get, I don't know if I'm getting personal because it was on Twitter, but I think when I first started following you, you did have a girlfriend. She was actually on a show that I watched on Netflix. But then obviously it went away. But like, relationship wise with you, because I know Dan's very open about what he does. So, but like with you, like, obviously you're more the, I want to say conservative side, but I don't want to say conservative because people are like, oh, he's conservative, you know, crazy people. But you're more like the reserved side, I guess you can say. You know, very intelligent. Now you're making you have money, making more money. Does that make it more difficult as a relationship side, or is it one of those like you have to find someone at the same level as you? Because and I'm only asking this because like listening to the Zach Morris episode, like he has a wife, he's married. I'm assuming he was married before like he became the Zach Morris before everybody knew him. So his wife has been through the downside, the upside with him. But like now you're like, you're young and you know, you make a lot of money. So like, is it hard now for that relationship? Because people know you have a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that I can't talk to girls. So, you know, I end up word fumbling and just talking about, you know, the stock market, Roth IRAs, like that usually really deflects any kind of female interaction. But yeah, I mean, I'm very, like I said, I'm very, like my job is my passion. So I think that for a lot of the times, you know, I'm very upfront with people that, you know, and let's take any relationship, you know, whether it be anything at all. It's like, hey, listen, like I love my job. Like I plan, like I have goals. Once I hit those goals, you know, then I'll be ready to go into the next stage of my life. But no, and also the other thing is like, I'm super frugal. So it's when it's like, do you want Starbucks? It's like, oh my God, no, like I would never pay for that. You know, again, very big deterrent from the female gender, you know?
I mean, I think even with being frugal, because I mean, obviously I make not even close to what you make, but I'm very frugal as well. And I mean, I guess in my case, like I've been with my wife. Well, we've been together for like 13 years. So I've been kind of the same person. Like I don't like spending money. Like we don't even share bank accounts, and which a lot of people think that if you don't share a bank account with your wife, you're going to get divorced, which I don't understand that logic. But it's one of those things that like, if she has her own money, she can go buy whatever she wants. I have my own money. I buy whatever I want. Then we have like our bill money. So I think the frugal thing isn't, I can't give that as an excuse because like I'm frugal. Like I don't, she goes to Ulta, we go to Starbucks, but you.
See, it'll eat at me. If I see somebody, like, again, I've increased my expenditures. Like I seriously used to be like senile about some of the things I used to do. Like I don't even, like, I look back at that and I'm like, I really used to do that. But I think that it would eat at me if I saw somebody like for like if I saw somebody who actively had like student loans or something, going out and spent like had like a like let's just say they bought like $12,000 shoes and like $10,000 purse, like it would eat at me. Like if I was just laying there in bed and I saw those shoes or something, it would keep me up at night. So I think to a certain degree that having that financial same headspace is important. I still think that like, it's okay to be different, as you were saying, you know, to like have your Starbucks and to have other things because, you know, I want to enjoy life. I joined like a car club, so I get to drive Ferraris and stuff like that. But that's like my way of like decompressing from all the madness and all the stress and stuff. But you also won't see me doing that, you know, every day, every weekend, you know? Yeah. So I think there's like a line. And to a certain point, it's not important until it becomes important, and then it'll just eat at me, you know? But like, yeah. I said, I can't talk to girls. So it really kind of, it's like a great deferment.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yes. And the buying the expensive stuff. Yes. I understand that. Like my wife has like a very expensive, frugal taste per yeah. se. Like she likes expensive stuff. Like she likes, you know, expensive stuff, but she knows how to space it out longer. Like
yeah.
She's not going to do it like every month. I got to go do this. No, like
yeah.
she knows I'll give her like the talk, like, hey, yeah. like, you know, we have a son, you know, we're going to have a future. Like you got to save money, stuff like that.
Especially if I have like a bad, like, and this is totally on me, but if I have like a bad trading week or something, and it's like, hey, like, can we buy these tickets to this concert? I'm like, hell no. Like, like what? Like, I'm down. Like, no, no way. And it's like, are you serious? Like you're going to make that in the podcast tomorrow. And it's like, so what's your point? You know,
it doesn't matter.
Like, yeah.
There's always an excuse of, well, you'll just make it tomorrow. So it doesn't matter.
Like, yeah.
Just think long-term.
Exactly.
Our word is F, well, our abbreviation is FF, because I had to read a book, my brother, because I have a rental, and he's like, my brother has a rental, he's like, I'm not going to help you until you read this book, yeah. but the main thing in that book was financial freedom, so we always joke, we're like, hey, FF, you know, financial freedom in like 10 years or something like that.
I'll tell you what, I could never work for somebody anymore. There's just no way. I love being able to do, because again, I do sit in front of the screen 16, 18 hours a day, you know, I'm up at 4, stuff like that. Like, but that is just becoming ingrained in me at this point. If someone was sitting there and I was sitting at my desk and someone was like, hey, put your phone away, don't answer that text, I don't even know what I would do. I'd probably quit. But like there's like those little things like that to where like I go for a walk midday. Like I couldn't do that when I worked for somebody, like just get up out of my desk and walk, you know? And some days I can't do that, but some, you know, I can. So I think that always scares the hell out of me is that, or like last Friday, I went and saw my friends down in, you know, Atlantic City. So I took the day off on Friday, you know, like it, and didn't even think about it, you know, didn't even faze me that it was like a Friday. So I think that not only does the money part scare me, but the like not being financially freedom and not being able to do what I want and not like, you know, and having to the other great thing that I used to love. And I don't want to say like with my older age, but as I get older, like I'm going to be doing this for a decade in a year. That's like mind blowing to me sometimes that it's almost been a decade of this. I mean, it's mind blowing to me, but my point is that I just couldn't do it anymore. I just wouldn't be able to, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it.
Be at a place at a certain time, taking orders from people. I do it every day, Monday through Friday. So that's always good.
That is nice. But
what the summer thing is, you get crap about it because it's like, you know, you guys have summers off, you complain about this, but like teachers work a lot during the school year. And like, I'm not trying to be like this teacher person, but you know, they give us, oh, you have summers off. It's like, you wouldn't last like a month in a teaching in a class. But no, I understand like working, having to not be able to text during meetings or just like people talking to you. It's like, I gotta stay anyways. It's like, I really want to go. I understand. I deal with
it. No, exactly. Like that's the thing, is like the money part scares me. At the end of the day, I could go back to making, you know, $100,000 a year, not take home, but you know, with, you know, making $50,000 take home and being perfectly happy. It's the not being able to do what I want when I want that scares the hell out of me. Also, like when I get a little chippery. So I don't think if my headspace didn't align with someone and I was truly passionate about it, I really don't know if I'd be at that job long.
I get fired in the first week.
Yeah. You know, like different colors, staples, yeah, or whatever, you know?
I understand that, like, you know, that attitude will come out, especially when you haven't dealt with that in a long time. You don't know how to deal with it. It's kind of don't talk to me. I understand that. I want to ask about, because you know how, like, a lot of those motivational, like, Instagrams are like, you know, you should stop watching Netflix and read a book. You should go to bed. You should, you know, meditate, take cold showers. Like, is that a mindset that you have, or do you even like believe in that kind of stuff? Cause I see it and I'm like, I like watching Netflix. Like when I have free time, like,
yeah,
you know, I don't want to meditate because my mind is just, I'm everywhere all the time.
Oh, I totally get that. I definitely get that. No, I don't believe in that. I really don't, because to me, it's, I used to be inside that like always doing something mindset all the time. And I got burned out so fast. And I also have a part of it is like, I have a heart condition. So I would land myself inside. What do you have? What's it called?
I had heart surgery when I was 2 days old. Yep. And then like a month later after that. So I see a cardiologist every year.
Yeah.
So I just had a stress test like this year. But okay. I think it's I have blood flowing back into my door won't close.
Okay.
I'm not a doctor. So
Yeah.
Like, when my doctor talks to me, he speaks in these big words. I'm like, can you like dumb and down? Like I'm a second grader. But yeah, no, yeah. Like, I was supposed to have another open heart surgery when I was 30. I'm 32 now.
Okay.
He says he's trying to wait until like I absolutely need it, so they don't have to like do it again.
Yeah.
I mean, I still played sports, but I always had to get clear for it. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's part of it, is that the reason that I would get burned out and literally like, and land myself in the hospital, because I would always just be, I mean, I would sleep like 2-3 hours a night, and I would just, you know, I would go to high school and then play sports and then, you know, work and then trade and then work some more and, you know, stuff like that. To the point that like, it would land me inside the hospital. And I was like, okay, I will die by 30 if I don't change something. And it was cool. Well, it wasn't cool, but it was great, because I was so productive during that part of my life. But like I said, I would die by 30 if I continue that. Like I looked like I had bags underneath my eyes. I was always in a bad mood. I fell, you know, truthfully, like I fell asleep behind the wheel one night. So it was, I don't do that. I don't do that. I can't do that, because I'm a very all or nothing person. So it comes down to priorities, you know, like what's going to be a priority. And that's kind of the other thing that kind of comes down to relationships, is that right now it's like trading, the podcast, my businesses, you know, stuff like that. So it's like, you know, relationships kind of get put on like the back burner. And sometimes, you know, that gets misconstrued as like me not caring, but really it's just like, hey, this is what I need to get done, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand that. About your businesses and stuff like that. Like, also, I've never landed myself in the hospital for my heart. So, I mean, I still work out like with the high schoolers and the football team. But yeah, like, I
look know, good.
Like, thanks. But no, like the good thing about that is like, I push myself because, like, obviously they're high school. So, like, obviously there's kids that are way stronger than me, but then there's the kids that are at my weight. And I'm like, oh, I can do that, which is a gift and a curse because, one, it's making me stronger, but also I'm literally killing myself trying to hang with these 17-year-old kids.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So, like, at this point, at this point, it's like, hey, like, today I had to take a nap and I couldn't go to the gym, and that's okay. Cause at the end of the day, I'm at a point to where it's way more about my overall well-being. And it's like, okay, you know what? Like I might not be the strongest I can be, but at the end of the day, like, guess what? Like, I'm going to enjoy tonight. Like, I'm going to have fun tomorrow. You know what I mean? But again, it's all about checks and balances. So I can't do that 5 days in a row, but at this point, like, I don't want to do it. No, I don't do it. And,
you also have to understand your body as well. Like,
I don't
try to, like, right now, I don't lift as heavy as I did maybe last year because I am getting old. Like, I have a son, like, I shouldn't be squatting 235 every
year. Yeah.
I mean, just put 135 on the bench. I mean, bar, that's fine for my squat workout.
Like that's what I mean. And so I'm all about living like a beautiful, great life. And that's really, like, truth be told, when I was inside that mindset and I was struggling with my heart condition, I was miserable and I was just at like a really dark place. And that's why I think I like love life right now, you know, even more because I was inside that place and I was always, and that's why, like, I don't care about like my grammar. Like, I, like, you know, I try and work on my grammar, but that's why I don't care. Like, people are like, you talk about your eye twitch openly and it's like, yeah, like, why not? You know, it's not going to go away because I don't talk about it, you know? Yeah. So I think it goes back to, you know, you have to go through like this dark period. And I'm talking about like trading, you know, like, you can't just, you know, if everybody could just walk up to the market and make tons of money, you know, for 30 years, everybody would do it. Like, it's a no-brainer. But that's not how it works. You know, like, you have to go through those struggles. And even, you know, like, it's down like seven figures in July or something. And it's, you know, so even though it's different perspectives as far as like money goes, and even though it's different, you know, like obviously $1 million at 16 would have bankrupted me, you know, if I was down that much, but it's still, you know, I still have tons of bumps in the road. And that's the beautiful thing. That's part of like what I love about trading is that, you know, at any moment, you know, the tide could shift, but at the same time, I could be 5x-ing my net worth, you know, in next month.
Yeah. And like, was your heart condition, like, you could say like maybe your lowest moment, or like, what could you say, like, because obviously you're young. So like having that, like, I guess, midlife crisis, or just like, oh my gosh, this is my lowest moment. Like, obviously probably, like, have you had that? Like, especially, oh, my light went off. I might need to get another one. But have you had that like moment of where you're like, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore?
Oh yeah. Like I said, so the darkest, wow. Yeah. We're really getting deep here, Colby. The darkest moments for me were, I was like 16 or 17. And I was passing out. I passed out 32 times in like a year or something. I'd passed out 32 times in a year. I was working two jobs and I would just consistently lose inside the market. So, and again, I was never a great student. So all aspects of my life, I wasn't a great student. I was working to fund the trading account that would just lose money. So it was like this big, like, rat race. And all at the same time, I felt like shit every day. So it really, that was tough. And once I even started to become profitable, it was like, wow, like, you know, again, it just snowballed. It was like, okay, like, now I can quit a job. So now I'm not working as hard. I'm feeling a little bit better, you know? So then just started to snowball. But no, I mean, I definitely had those moments. And I mean, I even have some of these moments now to where it's like, shoot, like, can I continue? Can I do this for forever? Like, can I keep this up at this pace? And then other times it's like, oh my God, like, this has to stop. Like, this can't be, You know, like I can't lose 5% of my account again, you know, like, it's always, life just comes down to checks and balances. And I don't think that if I didn't go through that dark period of my life, that I wouldn't be here and I wouldn't be as grateful. I wouldn't be able to handle the money. Like I had one guy, who reached out to me that said they made like $1 million, on GameStop or something, and he became addicted to drugs, and he blew it all like within a few months, and he didn't understand they had to pay taxes. And I was like, whoa, like you're throwing a lot at me, bro. So you know, and now, yeah, I mean, luckily all this happened super fast because he basically made $1 million and then became addicted to drugs and lost all. Like this all happened within like 6 months. And so he was forced to go to rehab and then he had to pay taxes. And it was like, you know, like he can't, you know, like his accountant was asking like where the tax money was, you know, where, so he was lucky in the sense that, you know, he didn't have any more access to this money and it forced him to change around his life. But coming back to where we are, I think that if I didn't go through those dark periods, you know, it could definitely lead down like a less simple life and a less humble life, because, you know, I mean, there was, like I said, is that Reno, you know, Reno cost me a good bit of money, but again, it was for FinTwit and for stuff like that. But when I see like over a 5-figure credit card statement and I can just pay it off, like that's a dangerous thing sometimes, you know, or the fact that, like, you know, I have 2 credit cards that have no spending limit. Like that's a dangerous thing. For a lot of people. So I think that all of that comes back to, you know, it's darkest before dawn. And I think, you know, I needed to go through that.
Yeah, no, that's a lot, especially.
I know. I wasn't expecting this, but.
Well, no, I mean, but I feel like someone at your age would have to go through something to be able to understand what they're doing now. Like, you can't be as successful as you are right now. I mean, you could, but everybody has that lowest moment to where it's like it changes them in an instant to get their head on completely straight and understand, like, I could end up like that guy, or I could change it all and focus and kind of, you know, form into this one person, into this the thing that you're doing, which obviously stops. But like when you do most, like a lot of things, like you talked about your multiple businesses, the podcast and stocks, like has, especially with the businesses, because like this is, you know, a personal question that maybe I want to ask is, yeah, like when you have multiple businesses, do people usually say, hey, you should probably focus on just one to, you know, really build that one up instead of having multiple ones? And I ask that because obviously I'm a teacher full time. I have a tutoring business, Grant Tutoring. I'm starting a photography business, Grant Visuals. Clearly, I love my name.
Hey, I don't blame you. Everything starts with Hennessy over here. All so, six.
Hey, and you know, some people are like, well, you should probably just focus on one company to build that up instead of just doing, obviously, you know, photography or the podcast or the teaching all at the same time, because maybe if you just really focus on this one thing, it'll take off more than the other things instead of having multiple things.
Nah, that's nonsense.
Well, the way that my brain works is,
yeah,
as you said, like sometimes you get burned out, and
yeah,
obviously, like when I first started tutoring, which, you know, I talk about in Jackson Entrepreneurs, but when I first started, it was just me. Like I tutored 10 kids a week. Like I was just all the time. And this is after working a full-time job.
Yeah.
And so I know the burnout with tutoring, but now like it's pretty much a smooth sailing. Like I have tutors. I kind of, you know, I get the clients, I text the tutors, and then like, hey, let me know if you need me, type thing.
Yeah.
So that gives me kind of freedom to start the photography business that, you know, I want to potentially grow. But I guess the question for me to you is like, as you said, it's nonsense. Like, have people told you like, hey, you should like slow down, like just focus on one thing?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I had tons of people. Like, I mean, not just one or two, like I had tons of people who told me that I couldn't do both trading and the podcast. And I was like, they're out of their mind. And I think it comes back to what you're talking about is that if you can handle it, you know, I'm always like 100% all the time, which is dangerous and a beautiful thing because I'm able to get a lot done when I need to or want to. But inside the same token, sometimes I take off more than I can chew. So I always take the mindset of, okay, let me not risk a lot to try it out. And if I end up enjoying it, it ends up, if I end up enjoying it, I end up, you know, benefiting from it either financially or again, enjoying it. And it's something, you know, and the cherry on top is if I'm bettering like my community or something, then I'm all in for it. But if I risk, you know, let's call it $1,000 to buy a photography set, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm not really making much money off this comparative to my time, which I would rather be spending my kids, you know, something like that on like a Saturday morning. And I'm not really enjoying it because the mom is complaining at me, telling me that this is how she wants the photo and I'm not doing it right. And it's not doing anything for the community. Then, you know, I take my $1,000 loss. I have a nice camera and for my family now, like that's usually the way that I like to do it is that like, I'll say yes to literally everything. And I'll go after everything. But even with the podcast, I used, AirPods. Yeah, AirPods for the first 30 episodes. Because I didn't even know if I wanted to do it after that. And yeah. So what was my risk? A little bit of time and I already had the AirPods. So at the end of the day, that was, and we spent like a few hundred dollars in editors. So that was my risk. And my reward was where we are now. You know, it's built up an amazing platform. We've surpassed any goal. We really perceived millions of views and we're here. But then, you know, there's been other businesses where, you know, I tried to do like, let me see, like I tried to do like some of the stupidest stuff and thank God, like I only spent like $2,000-$3,000 and that was my risk. And so that's the way that I always handle things is that it's always a yes. But it's a yes if I'm only risking this much, you know, and if I love it, then great. Then, you know, I get a nice headset, get a nice microphone, you know, I get a nice camera and we go from there. And if I'm making a little bit of money and I hope that I'm bettering the community, then it's a win, 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 win all across the columns. And that's the way that I try and always look at stuff is that it's always a yes. And then I reevaluate after, you know, after a good enough of amount of time.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's how I don't want to say that's how I think because it's like, oh, he's just saying what he's saying. But it's one of those, like, it goes back to with me is I have an idea that I have to do it. Like, I can't not think of something and then not do it because then I'm like, well, in a couple of years, I'm like, man, I should have did this. And now it's kind of too late. And I think, especially with the photography, like the tutoring thing was kind of like, it just happened. Like it literally just happened. But the photography thing, it's, you know, it's something that I have a nice camera.
Yeah.
I think I take good pictures, you know, if you got a great visuals, you can see it.
Yeah.
But I work at a high school, so I can take pictures of like, you know, football games, homecoming, stuff like that to get better. So, and that hopefully will build my brand. But yeah. I didn't know, like, in some cases, like with you, obviously you have a team. Like, do people, like, sit you down? It's like, hey, you should slow down a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's, and yeah. I mean, I definitely, and again, it comes back to that support system. You know, I have a team of advisors and stuff that are fantastic inside the sense of, you know, telling me, like, hey, dude, like, this is like, if I was ever going to be like a writing teacher, a writing professor, like they would sit me down and be like, you're out of your mind. Like, I like, you can get better at this and become a professor maybe in 20 years, but no, like, let's be honest here. And that's like the beautiful thing is that just surrounding yourself with just people that are honest. But all the time, I don't listen to them. And it's cost me with some, every time that I haven't listened to them, it's cost me thus far, but I had to not trust, you know, I had to, yeah, not listen,
you had
to them.
You had to do it.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, it cost me more than I would like to admit, but it had to be done. And so it happened, and now it's like, okay, yeah, maybe they know me a little bit, you know.
Maybe they figured out he's in.
Yeah, maybe maybe they know me a little bit better than I know myself, you know. And that's fine.
That's why they're professionals, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that's why I hired him, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. To know you better. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
To figure out your deep dark secrets.
Oh, yeah.
A couple more things. I actually got on my personal account, and I didn't say like who I was having on, because I kind of just like have people on because I as I said, I like interesting people that where they can, you know, educate someone else in what they know besides, like, we're talking like last episode I had Ohio Dave and talked about superheroes and stuff like that. So, but in this case, I got on my personal account and I was like, hey, I'm supposed to have this millionaire. No, I said, if you could ask a millionaire any question, what would it be? And of course I get some stupid answers like how long is this thing? And, you know, what's the social security cards, you know what, whatever. I did get two good questions that I'll ask you, but I know I'm talking your ear off, I'm sorry.
No, man.
So one question I have is about Zach Morris. Now, yeah. when you first met him, did you know, like, because obviously on Twitter no one knew who he looked like before.
Yeah.
So, like, did you know who he was before he was Zach Morris, or was it just like you guys built a relationship through Twitter and then kind of just like, all right.
Yeah. 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 So I had known Zach and a few of the other guys for almost 2 years about 2 years. And we had just built up a relationship. They'd been on FinTwit a lot longer than me. And I think I joined like the Discord at like 5,000 members, maybe it was 2,000, I forget, but it was inside the thousands. And I just released a few reports, and it was like, hey man, like, you know, can you check this out? Can you check this out? And I would give, you know, reports back and stuff like that. And so then we just built up a relationship, and I guess it's been almost 2 years since the first time that they knew my name and I knew their names, and, you know, and we, I think we had FaceTime for one of our birthdays or something. And we were taking shots together. I was like taking a shot inside my like parents' house, like sneaking alcohol. Cause I think I was like 20 or something. And so don't tell that, I'd taken like two vodka shots, and I'm like, I'm drinking in my room alone with people that I've never met in real life. And I was like, this is so wild. I was like, this is either a really big issue or this is going to be a really fun story in the future. And so far it's been a really fun story, but I was like, if my mother caught me, like I would literally be, it was like a Thursday night or something. And I was like 20 inside my parents' house, inside my bedroom. And I was like, oh my God, like I'm just drinking by myself inside my bedroom.
Technically, you're drinking with your crew just digitally. Like, you know,
yeah. Yeah. Well, the crew that I'd never met and who, yeah, I just found out their names. Yeah.
No, yeah, that's, I've always like, because obviously I know, obviously he's done his face reveal, which has caused everybody to do a face reveal. But I've always wondered, like, hey, how did that like relationship between like you guys like form? Because, you know, you see someone that is a high profile, you know, Twitter account, and then like you guys, like the first picture he puts out is with you.
Yeah.
So obviously he felt comfortable to put it with, you know, with you, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I really think that with money involved with anything, it's a big deal, obviously. And so there was a point to where we realized that we were throwing around like millions of dollars and hadn't met each other in real life yet. And this was like kind of like a group thing. And this was like, okay. You know, like maybe we should talk about this, or, you know, maybe we should meet up, you know? And it was just because we would talk every day and like, hey, like, what do you like today? Like, do you like this? Like, hey, I'm swinging this, you know, like this is on a dip, you know, one of my swings is on a dip, you know, stuff like that. And so I think that because there was money involved, we just naturally trusted each other on like a personal level so much faster, because it was like, yeah, hey, like, if you called me and were like, dude, this contract was just announced, like, you know, like, where are you? You know, like, I would throw like a million at it. But if you had asked me for my address, I'd be like, I don't know if I want to give this guy. And we were like, okay, like, there's clearly like an off balance here, you know?
Yeah, no, that's cool. Well, speaking of him, so I posted, he shared something. First of all, Zach is the real one, because he follows my Awkwardly Surprising and my personal one. So shout out to him. But he shared something and I got obviously excited. I was like, oh, maybe I can get him on the podcast. And I guess I got too excited, and it seemed like I was saying he was going to be on the podcast, it came off as, oh, he might be on the podcast. I was like, I should have just said hopefully. Like, I didn't mean to come off as like, oh, I'm definitely getting him on. I'm sorry, Zach, I didn't mean it. But if you want to come on, you know, please. But yeah, that, I had a question about that. And I want to talk to you about traveling, because you did just go to Egypt. How was that? We travel a lot over here. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a love-hate relationship with traveling, because I hate leaving work. So it's definitely like a love-hate thing, but I do love to travel. So yeah, we were just in Egypt, and that was beautiful. That was for my mom's birthday. And, you know, we got to do like the hot air balloons at like 4 a.m. over Garden of the Gods while the sun came up, and we got to, you know, go into pyramids that were 1 meter by 1 meter. And you know, we got to do the camel ride around different pyramids and stuff. So, you know, it was an overall really awesome time. You know, we were on the Nile. It was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. It was a once in a lifetime experience for sure. But no, I mean, I love to travel for sure.
Yeah. So is that the only place that you've been? Like,
Yeah. So my mom calls it, like, she tries to do one thrill and one chill. One chill being like, let's call it like Puerto Rico or like Costa Rica, and then one thrill. So like, you know, Rome or Paris, Egypt, stuff like that. You know, I've never been to Switzerland, but that's literally so high on my list, being a big skier. So yeah, that's what we try and do.
But let me ask you these quick questions real fast. One of them is actually from, she's in ninth grade now, and she was my fourth grade student when I taught fourth grade.
Okay.
And so she was one of them that messaged me, and I was like, wait, you're in the stocks? She was like, yeah, that's my so mom's funny. Been talking to me about it, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, that's really cool. I think it was like, what stocks are you in? Like, what are some good stocks? She's in ninth grade.
Okay.
And so it's one of those, like, she's investing for the long term per se.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I always say for most people, especially younger people, is to pick target date funds. And the reason I love target date funds is that, you know, she's a young person, and she's probably a busy young person. And so if she picks a target date fund, then she can just contribute to it. Let's call it a target date fund at Vanguard for, you know, held 2070, you know, then it's something that right now it's going to be on the riskier side, because she has a lot more time to make that money back. But again, she doesn't have to do anything. This fund just by itself. So I think that target date funds by like Vanguard are can be really best friends for busy people who might not necessarily know, you know, tons about the market yet, and are just trying to throw money into something. And you know, you'll see with some of the Vanguard funds that they'll call them like risky, and then you look at it and it's just risky because there's no real bonds in there. It's like their top holdings are Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and it's like, Okay. Like how, we're talking about juggernauts, like $1 trillion, you know, like almost a $1 trillion company. So I think that, you know, that sometimes scares people when they look at target date funds is that, you know, the risky level's 4, but then it's like, it's just because there's no bonds in there. And in my opinion, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Okay. So if you could give her 3 individual stocks to own for, let's say she's in 9th grade, the next 10 years, which ones would they be?
Yeah. I mean, I really think Disney and Apple are in, and I mean, I'll even throw Amazon in there. I mean, these are companies that are just so big and like we, in the 80s and in the 70s and the 80s, it was different because companies couldn't innovate quite like they can now. These companies have so much money and they're so big. Like we've never seen companies this big ever. You know, oil industry, different story, but we've never seen tech companies this big with this much cash. So that's why we saw, like, even today, Amazon is working on like a fitness app, you know, Amazon is doing groceries, Amazon doing, drones, Amazon's doing, you know, everything. Apple's starting to do cars, you know, and it's not because that's where they, you know, I mean, Amazon started as a bookstore, Apple started as a computer, technology. So I think that they're so big that any hot space that there is that they have so much money and they're so big that they can just innovate and just instantly acquire all the best companies, even if they're 200 million, even if they're $1 billion, like it's fine. Like they just do it. So I think that really Disney is probably my top one, Apple and then Amazon as well.
Okay. Next question. I like Disney and Apple. Like this. Okay. Do you have any assets besides, I don't know if this is a personal question, but like what assets do you own and like why do you own them?
Yeah. So I don't own any, let's call them hard assets. So no real estate, no cars, anything like that. And part of that is just because I haven't found the right real estate deal yet. And that's all. But there will come a time that probably in the near future that I buy a house or I at least buy an investment property. I just haven't found the right one. A car, I live close to the city, so I don't really need one. And then as far as like, you know, instead of hard assets, I own parts of like private companies. And so on your balance sheet, you can actually put that down as an asset. So I own like a part of a cannabis company, you know, part of two smaller tech companies. And those go on the books as an asset.
Perfect. Last few. You're not really big into crypto, are you?
No. I have an NFT, but I just don't see the value in it. And I think there's more risk than I just don't know enough about it. And I think that there's I just don't know enough about it, I think is the best answer.
Yes, I understand. I'm with you on that. I tried understanding NFTs. I was like, I don't have enough time to figure it out.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with everybody having their stuff. I just, as much as I want one, I know I don't have time for it. And I think you might've talked about this, that, you know, is the market headed for a crash, which I think I would say no, but I know nothing. I don't know anything.
I honestly think that nobody knows anything. I think that's usually the best, you know, I think people that try and time the market are dumb, personally, if I'm just speaking freely. I think that it's impossible to time the market. But if we're looking at the market right now, the Fed is buying billions and billions of dollars every month. You know, companies are doing buybacks, you know, stuff like that. I think that not a crash. I don't think like a 10 or 15% pullback is out of the question. In fact, it might even be healthy. But until something changes as far as the economy goes, whether it be the Fed stops buying, you know, we go into another lockdown, something like that, I think that the market is going to continue to go. And I think that even at these levels, you know, the market closed today at 433. I honestly, the lowest that I think the market would ever go is like 350. And I mean, at that point, that's, you know, that's really not that big of a drawdown. So I think that the market's rigged to the upside. I don't think that we'll ever see like a Black Monday again. I don't think like we'll ever see like a 80% reduction. So I'd spy from here, you know, stuff like that.
And that's perfect. The last question was like about college, which we talked about. It is necessary, but like you got to just figure out, you got to just keep working with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or just stay busy, so you're not just sitting there on your hands. But I appreciate you giving me all this time. I didn't think we were going to have this much time, to be honest with you. I was like, oh, he'll tell me in an hour, like, hey, I got to go. So I do appreciate this whole, like, you know, you sitting down with me.
No, dude, thank you seriously for having me.
Yeah, next time it's got to be both you and Dan.
We're down for that. And we could definitely get Zach on. He would love to come on, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd love to be his first official face-to-face, awkwardly surprising out of the, I know he did something with someone else, but unless it's like the best podcast that's no one listens to, doesn't matter.
Yeah,
like in yours, obviously, you know, he'll go in yours, but I mean, yeah, if he's down, like I'm always down. Like I'm trying to do this like once a month guest, because like obviously I am busy, podcasting is my hobby, so like when I can get someone that I truly are interested in and I like, and like I see what they're doing and they're, you know, they're good, why not have them? So have November and December open. So let me know, guys.
I mean, we'll still have to flirt inside the DMs, right?
I'm fine. Once I figured out that I can only get you through Instagram, that's, I'll only do that. I figured that out. So that's cool. So if you're listening to this, where can they find you, even though we've already talked about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, pretty much on both Twitter and Instagram, I'm Hugh_Henny. Actually on Instagram, I'm Hugh_Henny, no underscore. And on my podcast, PGIR, or Penny's Going Raw, which is on all major platforms.
Yes. And you can find me, awkwardly surprising on Instagram, ColbyGrant24 on Instagram and Twitter. And, you know, all my other things, Grant Tutoring at Grant Tutoring, or Grant Visuals. Grand Visual, so you can guys see my pictures and stuff like that. If you like it, please give it a follow, but you know, if not, it's not a, you don't have to. So we'll catch you guys next time. Well, hopefully.
Hey Colby, thanks again for having me, man.